the thing that's so damn frustrating, Derek, about when this happened is that we were just getting to the meat of spring training, where Dylan Carlson would have been given every opportunity to fail. He would have been given every opportunity to sink or swim.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week for a second episode this week because baseball's back, so we figured we'd double up on the podcast this week with KMOX's Chris Raby. Chris, usually we do this in Jupiter. We do a home and home, if you will, on the podcast front. So thank you for joining me from your home in St. Louis. Well, I guess I should ask, are you at your home?
I am at my home right now, which has also become, like many people, if not everyone that we know and love, my office or recording studio or whatever else. So, yeah, it's worked out. And, you know, it's funny, Derek, I was thinking about some of our conversations and the fact that you joined me for a chat. Actually, I think it was the Friday before the Cardinals went over to the west side of the state, because I was going over to Naples to see some family. And then we were going to do the second half of the home and home 3 days later. But that happened to be, just Tuesday, March 10th in Fort Myers, the first day of the no reporters in the clubhouse, which we thought was just, at the time, an inconvenience. And I remember us laughing about it with Mike Schilt. He kind of did the stay away, stay 6 feet away. And who would have known that 24 hours later, the world would change. I don't, and that's putting it lightly, I don't even remember anyone speculating at all that day at JetBlue Park in Fort Myers that, you know, anything would be put on hold. I don't remember that at all.
I don't think that really came up until the NBA.
Yeah, because the next night was Gobert, yeah.
Right, and then that's when it kind of became clear. I do remember there was discussion because in Fort Myers at Minnesota's camp, after you guys had left the manager's office, I'm not sure if you were down there, but after people had left, I stayed back and I have it on my tape. And I asked Mike Schilt, I said, have you given any thought to what it'll be like playing baseball without fans? And he said, what? And I said, that could be where you are by Thursday or Friday, and that's how this season could start. Have you given any thought to what a stadium will look like when it's empty and you're trying to play baseball? And he said, I have not given one thought to that. Let's hope that doesn't happen. And I was like, okay. But I figured I had to ask at that point in time, because that was the day that they announced that they were going to close the clubhouses.
Yeah.
And as you might recall, I was rather vocal that was like a cosmetic thing, like that, you know, that does not, and I stand by that. Like, then if this is serious enough to keep people at a distance, and we've all learned that it was, then closing the clubhouse to the media is only part of a larger step that you have to take to keep players healthy. It wasn't like the step,
you know, and just as this has evolved, and I think the degree of seriousness to which people take this and have implemented it into their lives, but at the same time realizing there are some aspects that are perhaps, you know, more cosmetic, as you say. But it's funny that, like, 2 days later they were playing that odd game.
It's terrible. Yeah.
For some reason he's still playing it. And then I was talking to Chris Carpenter for another podcast, a project that I've been working on the 2011 team. And he said that, you know, with the veterans, they started walking out of the dugout. They didn't know the game had been canceled and that essentially the world had hit a pause button. And he said that, you know, on this Thursday in Jupiter in the fifth inning, on just a gorgeous day, fans down the right field line were giving them standing ovations and were saying, like, great spring. Like, we won't forget, like, no matter what happens, we're with you guys. And he's like, man, like, I don't think anybody played that well today. Like, it was just a normal spring game. Like, man, everyone in the stands was on their phones. It was like Mark Cuban at, you know, the Mavericks game when he was going around that, and before I get us too sidetracked, he was going around that Wednesday night, like, showing players on the bench that Rudy Gobert had tested positive for this, and everyone was finding out in real time. That's been kind of the weird, eerie aspect of this.
Well, we're recording this on the morning before we go back to the home ballpark. So we've had almost 4 months at home, right? Is that worked out? You know, wow. Working from home, covering baseball from home. You've worked on the 2011 project, and I want to talk to you at the end of this about that. But we are talking now within hours of baseball being back at Busch. The players are already there as we speak and later on in the day. So before people are listening to this, we'll have had our first access to see official baseball workouts since March 12th, so 113 odd days. Chris, it's a tradition at the Post-Dispatch that we kind of present 10 questions that the Cardinals must answer throughout the course of spring training. And in, you know, Friday morning's paper, we revisited this notion in the middle of summer. And so for a shortened camp, we went with a shortened list of questions because there's less time to answer them. But I wanted to bounce some of these off of you if you're game. I want to ask you the 7 questions that we said that are confronting the Cardinals and, you know, use that kind of as this backbone for a conversation about where they are at this point as they get ready for a 60-game mad dash to the postseason and if baseball can get there. And that's where it starts is the first question is, can they start healthy? And then can they stay healthy? You know, all the intake screenings are there. The Cardinals as a team had one positive test so far. That person, which cannot be clarified as a player or a staff member or whatever, has been put in quarantine and is going through now the protocols laid out by MLB. So that's the first part. But the other part is, like, what's going to be the health of the overall team? What kind of work did they do at home to stay healthy, right?
Yeah, I thought you made that – really good point in the paper, in the piece right off the top, Derek, because, like, we have to think of healthy and we have to think of a player's abilities in terms of if he's available or healthy now in two completely different ways. And, you know, it's not like anymore, well, I guess we could argue all day about a sprain is actually a strain and there are some nuances, but the nuance now is not even a nuance. It's like, no one knows what or how or when this could happen. And then there is no treatment, you know, in terms of you can't go into the trainer's room and have them work on your ankle, or you can't begin a throwing program after you've been down for 15 days. Like, if you get the virus and test positive because of A, the just unknown of the effects it would have, B, the policies to then isolate the player, keep them away from the team, and C, just the fact that everyone's, again, learning at the same time. And the thing that I don't want to sound too melodramatic, like, and use the word scare, but I think as a sports fan, the thing that scares sports fans, and you heard Mo say it the other day, he's like, yeah, it kind of wakes you up at night. Like, no one can control to any tangible extent, like, how the virus could impact things. And I think that Mo has been really pragmatic from the start, right? Like, he said back in March or April, whenever we talked to him on what would have been opening day, like, you know, his mantra is just kind of assume you have the virus, you know, and live your life that way. But for guys that are, you know, in their 20s and creatures of habit in terms of how they prepare for games and what they do and how they work out and the time they spend together, but then also how they spend their time after games and their free time, like, who knows? Like, it's easy to say, you know, go to the ballpark, go home, sit around. It's easy to say if we continue to, you know, socially distance and wear masks when we can, well, most of us, and, you know, do these little things to try and stop the spread of, you know, any potential virus that could spread, like, things will be okay, but we don't know that. And, you know, everyone's going to have to continue and probably ramp up the personal responsibility that they are taking on themselves. And that includes the players. That includes any employee who's coming, you know, around the ballpark, or, you know, just literally anyone. And that's been the thing that I think is kind of hard for me to wrap my head around, because, you know, there's always going to be kind of this elephant in the room, I feel like, that, you know, at any moment, XYZ player could get this. And even if they felt completely fine, if, you know, Mike Trout tested positive the week before the playoffs, he's going into isolation. And it's not something you can play through. And that's going to be, I think, a really just a fascinating case study in A, how does, you know, the implementation that's been put in place evolve, but B, how seriously do the players take this? And I think, you know, it'll be mostly their actions that probably determines the infection rate or lack thereof or hot spot in any given club.
Yeah, I think that I find the kind of tandem test that the players are going to have to go through very interesting is that they had to go through the COVID-19 series of tests to get into spring training. And then the first few days of spring training are going to be tests of their work ethic and habits since baseball goes down. You know, what is harm health? What is leg health? What is your physicality? How ready are your hamstrings? How ready are your feet? How ready are your knees for all
have
this?
Have you been on a couch or have you been, you know, doing
working out,
all activities? Like you said, if you're standing in cleats on a dirt infield for a couple of hours and you haven't been in cleats for 3 months, like that's going to affect your body. But then also, you know, the PGA Tour, when they had their first couple of positive tests the first 2 weeks, you know, there was not a system that you had to be tested and test negative before you came into the bubble. And while it's 100,000,000% apples and oranges, I think that maybe some of the testing protocols where we have seen groups in large concentrated volumes with essentially unlimited access to testing, like the PGA Tour over the last 3 weeks, that is maybe a good learning curve for the rest of these sports to at least say, all right, well, here's something that went wrong. Here's something we didn't think of. And, you know, it's just, it's going to continue to evolve. But you're right. Like, man, I can't imagine if, you know, Clayton Kershaw was supposed to go in the World Series and, you know, two nights before walking into the ballpark, he tests positive. It's just, it's bizarre.
Or like the Cubs are going through with Quintana, right? Like an injury that comes up, just, you know, a freak thing. Or here in the coming weeks, there's going to be, because we know how injuries happen in spring training, you know, as players start to push themselves, as adrenaline starts to arrive, you know, there's going to be something. There already has been for the Cardinals. When you think about it, they gave John Brebbia time to rest. And now he's out for the season because it just, when he tried to push it, then he required elbow surgery. So, you know, I think that's something to watch is just the parallel tracks between illness and injury. These are there and they are defining guardrails for how teams get through the spring training. Before I get to the next question, which definitely touches on health, Chris, I want to tell people about our sponsor. Imagine your home totally organized. Closet by Design specializes in custom closets, pantries, laundry rooms, garages, and more. Now get 40% off plus an additional 15% off. Closet by Design, 314-733-9855. That's Closets by Design, 314-733-9855. Closets by Design, the official sponsor of the best podcast in baseball. Chris, health has changed the look of the Cardinals' rotation, and health is also going to be a part of how they choose who finishes games. And this is the second question that I had confronting the Cardinals is, who will finish the rotation? They have four guys now with Miles Michaelis back in the fold. They have four guys certain, and that sets up a competition for the fifth spot between Carlos Martinez and Gungyung Kim. And then, of course, who will finish games? And if Carlos isn't starting games, does he then finish games? Because Jordan Hicks won't be available to start the season. He'll be available at some point in time, but they've said he'll start the regular season on the injured list.
And as you just alluded to, the kind of tandem testing, and I am not saying this to be presumptuous or critical, but I think it is fair to say that in the past, when left up to his own devices and when perhaps confronted with copious amounts of free time, that Carlos Martinez maybe treats that free time differently than, let's say, Jack Flaherty or Adam Wainwright. Is that fair? And sometimes, obviously, what he needs physically and what they're continuing to learn about his shoulder affects him differently, especially in the spring. So after 3 or 4 months off, essentially, you know, we've talked a lot in the past, Derek, about short burst Carlos. And I just, I mean, it would be great if he came into camp and he was, you know, the guy with the stuff that could go seven innings. And I know it's a 60-game season, so if there was any time to turn him loose in the rotation, there probably was. But doesn't, like, this situation seem almost even more perfect? Because you could almost, you know, forget the governor in terms of, you know, using him on back-to-back nights or three nights in a row if it's just 60 games. And
yeah,
to get the short burst, it would be way less workload for his shoulder going into the next offseason. And you wouldn't have to wonder what the consequences, positive or negative, over the last 3 or 4 months on his body have been. I'm not saying that he was doing anything nefarious, but certainly he wasn't under the strict regimen and the strict shoulder regimen that he would have been on, you know, through camp and into the regular season.
I think it will be really interesting to see how the Cardinals set this up, because Gungyung Kim, in back to that game against Minnesota, really asserted himself as belonging in the rotation. But again, that was so many months ago. Now, the Cardinals have seen him.
I think Nelson Cruz, like, laughed and turned around.
Yeah.
Turned around to Kisner and was like, "What in the world did he just throw?"
Yeah. There was a lot of. I mean, that, and that was a good lineup. I mean, he went up against a lineup that the Cardinals are going to see pretty early in the season. You know, they're going to face the Twins. It looks like four times, and pretty quickly, right off the hop, go and see them. And that's a team that, you know, thunders. And oh, by the way, added the bringer of rain in Josh Donaldson.
Yeah.
To it, so
yeah,
and so he did well against him. He has a bit of an edge because he came to St. Louis continued working out with Wainwright. So the Cardinals have seen him. He's thrown live BPs. He was one of the first pitchers to go to Busch Stadium and work out when it was permitted in these small groups. The hitters have seen him. They know what they've gotten him, and they remain intrigued by him. So that gives him a little bit of a leg up, because it's almost like he's got several months of a head start on this spring training, at least as far as knowledge goes, whereas Carlos is coming from the Dominican, where the Cardinals are have a little less feel for him. I'm fascinated by not so much the rotation, but how the Cardinals then utilize the next five guys who could be in the rotation, because there's so many different looks that they could throw at teams. You could go Wainwright start, then Yenesis Cabrera from the left side come in. You know, you put Carlos after Gungyung Kim in a game, and what a different look that is. I mean, it's just, they can really complicate things for a lineup by having one guy start, and I bet they could find the opposite of that guy to come in next almost every time. I mean, like, you go Flaherty to start, Gomber to come in. You go Dakota to start, Ponce de Leon to come in. And while it's not left right, it is, you know, sinker and then elevated. I mean, it's just, I think that's a fascinating thing that they could do.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned Alex Reyes, right? And like,
right,
what he could potentially give in short bursts, very short bursts. You know, and I think that as you kind of look at that, you're right, they really do have the mirror and they have the compliments, but also, you know, the new rules are going to be in effect. And I feel like the guys that they have, Derek, even the young guys, they don't really have anyone that's like real splitty necessarily.
Right.
And I think that if you can control the innings of a lot of these guys through the 60-game stretch, it does a bunch of things. It allows you to maybe shorten the rotation at the end. It allows you to keep it lengthened out into the postseason. It allows you to maybe get some younger guys some looks, and maybe get some guys that can be real weapons at the back end of the bullpen some looks. I mean, Cody Whitley was one of the best guys in all spring, I thought, and he was unbelievable last year. And, you know, they're so deep that he wasn't really someone that was, you know, being penciled in necessarily if spring training had continued normally in a prominent role. And throughout all of this, I really believe that with the handling of the bullpen, with the excess of riches that they have from a pitching standpoint, with the new rules, I think Mike Schilt and his staff are going to be a huge asset in the utilization of that. Because, you know, we've debated in the industry for a long time how you try to calculate the worth of a manager or the war of a manager and his staff. But just look at the way they managed the bullpen last year, and specifically the load management, the workload management, you know, making sure that they didn't, you know, get to a Kevin Seager situation, Seth Maness situation, someone that was just running to the ground after he had been your most important guy. I guess Gallegos faded maybe a little bit, but point being, I think they're going to be so good at not only accumulating all the pieces, but then moving them around the chessboard, depending on a variety of situations and a variety of teams that they're going to be facing that are frankly unfamiliar with their personnel. So I think all that's going to be nice.
The next question is a simple one for you, Chris. Who's in left field for you?
If it was me, I would love to see Dylan Carlson in left field. But I think you made the point, and I think you even quoted Mo, that he's kind of reiterated over and over and over and over again that, you know, Tyler O'Neill and Lane Thomas specifically kind of deserve this opportunity. They both were playing better in the spring. I'm really intrigued by Lane Thomas. It's a shame that he got hurt when he did at the end of last year, because you know, Derek, how many champions he has in the organization. I think he would have ended up starting in the postseason.
Absolutely.
If he had been healthy at the end of last year. And his skill set is just so unique and maybe still kind of unknown to the fan that thinks they know who Lane Thomas is because of how he looks or because of the comps that get thrown out. Like, he's a really, really interesting player. Dylan Carlson's a superstar.
Really?
And I think that just at some point, I hope, selfishly as a baseball fan, there's an opportunity to unleash him. But we've seen this in the past, and we're just getting the taste of it with Tavares. You know, I don't think they're going to do it unless he's playing every day. It's different when there's no minor league season and when there are no at-bats in Memphis that he would otherwise be getting. But I'll say Lane Thomas starts in left field. I think Tommy Edman probably plays third base, and then, you know, they'll shuffle the pieces around to get everybody a day here, a day there, whatever. But, you know, in left field, Lane Thomas.
Why not Tyler O'Neill? Why so quick to – I mean, I think Lane Thomas is fascinating. I think he's actually competing for at-bats at all three spots, to be honest.
Sure. You know what? You're right.
Bader struggles, Thomas is going to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the fact that all of these games are worth like 2.5 games.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get your 0 for 6, your 0 for 9, or if you're, you know, tweak something, or if somebody gets sick, you know, heaven forbid – Tommy Edman could play left field. I just, if you ask me, your best team on paper right now, and who knows, because like you said, one of them could show up, you know, looking quite differently than they did in the spring. I'm just kind of tantalized by what a lot of Lane Thomas could give you, both defensively, but, you know, what hundreds of at-bats of Lane Thomas could give you. And then I like him in third base. Matt Carpenter's doing a majority of the DH.
Really? Not Brad Miller?
Well, I guess Brad Miller would be the logical DH choice as well. I mean, if you look at on paper, Brad Miller's probably got, what, more power than on the team?
Yeah, he's the 850 OPS guy they were kind of looking for.
Yeah, you know, the problem with having the quote-unquote Ben Zobrist type is that it's really hard to use a Ben Zobrist type, and it's really hard to keep everyone happy every day when that means guys are going to sit. Like, I thought all offseason when we would talk about this and, you know, at least some narratives would say, yeah, well, you'll start Edmund like 30 games at third and 30 games at second and 30 games in left. And 30, like, that's really hard to do, I think. And it also assumes that everyone's going to be good and everyone's going to be healthy every day and you're not going to have any issues. But, like, that's really hard to do. So, Brad Miller could be your DH. Let me throw it back at you. Do you need or do you expect a set lineup that we'll see, with the exception of maybe Fowler hitting against righties? How many days in a row do you think we'll see the same lineup?
Not very often. I think there's going to be a lot of matchup oriented. I think it's going to be driven by that. The DH is going to float around. I think, you know, they're going to get Paul DeJong off his feet at some point in time. So they got a lot of off days early on that'll help. But, you know, I think they're going to move the DH around to play off the matchups, especially because you think about it, how many switch hitters they could have at one point in time when Dylan Carlson joins. You know, they're going to have the Tommy Edmonds, Dexter Fowlers, and then Dylan Carlson that they could switch around quite a bit. And I think that plays into it. You know, I think we do a disservice to dismiss Tyler O'Neill.
Maybe
the opening day starter and left, because they just like that power so much. And, you know, he started off spring with a bang, literally, hit a home run in his first at bat and then struck out, you know, almost half of the next few at bats that he had. And so did Harrison Bader. In fact, the two of them were among the leaders in spring training and strikeouts. That's got to concern the Cardinals, and both of them have to change that rate to start. If the both of them don't, then all this talk about left field is quaint, but they're looking for two options. And I think it's really the key question as to who's in left field is actually a matter of time, not a matter of person. Yeah. It's a matter of how long do you give the people you have here time to prove it? How long does each get? And that goes for the outfield as a group, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting that, and I'll use the collective we, but, you know, people that call on my show or Twitter or just anything that we talk about in the offseason, the outfield situation always seemed to be Tyler O'Neill and Lane Thomas were kind of grouped together as a twosome, right? Dexter Fowler was kind of grouped in right. Dylan Carlson was the unknown, but the assumption was kind of like, well, if Fowler like doesn't play well, you just put one of them in right. Harrison Bader was almost granted kind of incumbency, which I never really understood. He's an elite defensive player, but especially, as you just said, like, you got to produce offensively. And I know he showed some flashes at the end of the year, but which Harrison Bader are you going to get? The one that was, I think, an encouraging offensive player, if that's fair, in 2018, maybe more than encouraging in terms of where he was in his career and his plate appearances, but then a guy who took a big step back last year. And it just seemed like he was always kind of not even penciled, penned into center field. But I think you're right. I think you got to look at all those positions as fluid. And Mike Schilt has shown that, you know, he will make a move that might not be obvious on the surface. I mean, when he took over for Mike Matheny, Jose Martinez was like in the batting title race and he sat him because of his defense.
Yeah.
He sat him. So I think that, you know, maybe we'll see all five guys get opportunities and maybe Edmund's in that mix too, or Brad Miller be out there a little bit. And maybe just if somebody gets hot, maybe they just play. And it's as simple as that because only got 60 games.
And then Dylan Carlson's first major league home run will be into the corn in Dyersville, Iowa, and we'll all be writing about the legend of it for years and years and years to come, correct?
Wouldn't that be unbelievable? Although, do you think like – so how long had he not been born when that movie was released? I legitimately wonder if he's even seen it. And, you know, you're a baseball guy. You say you've seen a baseball movie. But if you're a 20-year-old kid, you know, unless, like, your family had it on, like, DVD, I don't really know if you'd stumble across Field of Dreams. Flipping around cable, maybe?
It was 9 years. He was almost born 10 years after it was. So 9 years after it came out, he was born in 1998. So, that movie was 1989.
Yeah. A lot he doesn't remember, but that's, wow. That's a cool kind of, I guess, departure from just some of the normal storylines and what ifs. And if this happens and this happens, kind of cool. The Cardinals are getting to go do that. I hope it works out, and I hope there are no issues, but it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be something. You know, it's along the way to, you know, Chicago, so it's a bit of a detour, but I think, you know, the idea is to try to loop it in there, and I know the Cardinals have wanted to be involved in the special events game, and it's hard to beat being part of a first one like that, especially with what it visually could look like. And at the time, you know, when certainly the country will be aching for something magical or romantic, maybe that offers it.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, for just the pure baseball that everyone's missed and just the things that we love about baseball, what the essence of that movie is, it will be. But again, Dylan Carlson may not understand that, and he might look around as the bus is driving through Iowa and say, well, I guess he would have played the I-Cubs, but, you know, where in the world are we? did they build it? And is anyone actually going to come? People probably won't be allowed to go. But they will.
I think we should give him more credit. I think he's a baseball nut. And
no. Oh, I know. I'm being, but I will tell you that, you know, I am a baseball nut, and there are sports nut. There are movies I haven't seen. I'm talking tongue in cheek. You know, I think everyone's.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're a baseball guy, you've seen all of those movies. But you know, maybe I'll put it this way: maybe he's not as familiar with the rest of Kevin Costner's catalog or James.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe
after that Bull Durham and yeah, Field of Dreams. Maybe after that, he's not as, you know, he might not be a huge Dances with Wolves guy.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. Or maybe For the Love of the Game has slipped under his radar. I think that's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I probably ought to. I'll have to think about how to do this. I probably ought to at some point in time, if that game looks like it's going to happen, and it's going to happen in Dyersville. I probably should find a way to tell the story of talking to W.P. Kinsella one night. And one of the highlights of my young life was going to see him read from one of his books, Box Socials, and talking to him afterwards. It was I'll never forget it. I still have a signed copy of my favorite book of his, Iowa Baseball Confederacy, from that. So I'll overdo it if that happens, if that game happens. I'll overdo it. What's that?
How many times have you been there before?
I've been there twice.
The actual field? You've been there twice?
Yeah, I went there in college. Met my dad, played a game there, the pickup game. My dad hit a home run into the corn. Then a couple
of
years ago,
Carlson.
My dad. Yeah, we went and I went and retrieved the ball and everything, so we got it back. And then I went on a Great American Road Trip with my son. And the first place we stopped after leaving St. Louis was the Field of Dreams, and we played. It was harder to play there. We got there just before a softball team just took it over, and I mean we just were swarmed. But we got a good 45 minutes in before that happened, and took fly balls, and he chided me for not being able to hit it into the corn like Grandpa did. So nice. I got it to the. I got warning corn power. That's what I got. Warning corn power.
Yeah, you scared the corn. You husked it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just flicked it just enough. I came to the base of the stalk, not into the ears. So.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Oh well, I guess that's called. I guess if you pull it down the line and it bends just foul and away from the corn, that you shucked it. I guess that's what that means.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
See, and now we get to work on a lot of corny puns.
Oh, man, I'm all over it. I cannot wait. I mean, I have the kernels of a few puns ready to go. I'm just going to pop them on people.
Oh, my.
All right, so that brings us to the next question. Speaking of puns, and you touched on it here that, you know, like Schilt doing some counterintuitive moves maybe, certainly how they handle the bullpen. And one of the questions I wondered is, like, how can creativity become an edge for a team? Both creativity and how they run 19 workouts condensed into this short window, and also how they run a team with an expanded roster for 2 weeks. Well, really an expanded roster for the first month, let's be candid. And then a sprint to the finish. So, you know, the creativity that we see, whether that's the layering of the pitching staff, as we discussed earlier, or it's the use of the DH, or even something so granular as how they win extra inning games and how they defend against extra inning games. I find it fascinating that, like, the manager and the pitching coach and really the analytics department in the front office, their creativity and their willingness to think within, like, this, like, constrained season really could become an edge.
Well, and how about also then away from the competition itself, how you deal with success, how you deal with failure. I mean, once you leave the ballpark, again, these are young, you know, professional athletes who all of a sudden can't do anything that they've been used to doing over the last couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
You your whole life is going to be completely turned upside down. And I'm not saying that, you know, Mike Schilt is going to be having guys lie down on the couch in his office before games and spill their guts, but I think there's a human element to that, right? Like,
sure.
Everybody goes through stuff. I mean, certainly travel is going to be different. Nutrition is going to be different. The accessibility for video is going to be different. Like, just the way these guys interact is going to be different. So all of that is going to change. You're right. It starts over these next 19 days. I think that even though I've really only seen what the Cardinals do, so I can't really compare it to how other camps are run, it just seems that there's always a purpose to what Mike Shilton and staff are doing. Whether it's, you know, the time spent in the morning before things get going, or if it's the time stretching. We don't really see that long 25-minute lazy, fun, amicable, smiling, you know, with the speaker stretch time anymore. It just seems like everything is just kind of with a purpose, and with a purpose that is greater than just that individual moment, knowing that at some point there is going to be a situation that arises where what you are doing right now is going to benefit you in the moment. And that's really, I think, the intersection of, you know, a staff and a manager that can have tangible effects and positive effects on what happens on the field. And then a staff that maybe doesn't necessarily get to say that or get to put that on the resume. And again, like, we're going to beat this horse to death, just that, you know, it's only 60 games and every game and every decision matters so much, but I kind of feel like Mike Schilt already treats it that way. And just, you know, the way that he prepares and the people he's learned from, and, you know, the way that I think he loves tackling a challenge, tackling, you know, planning for spring training. You know, they're down there in what, January, December, November, getting ready for stuff. So who knows what he's cooked up over the last few months, but this is where he thrives. This is where Ollie Marmol thrives, as you just, everyone, the entire staff. So I think that, you know, we may not see it right off the bat in terms of like crazy hit and runs or crazy in-game stuff, but you mentioned the extra inning stuff. And then just even like the day-to-day stuff, the travel is different, like where they can go eat, what they can eat, how they recover, the training room, all that's different. So he who adapts and the club that adapts the most quickly and makes a challenge a strength will probably see that show up in the win column.
One of that, too, is also how they structure the schedule to get looks at guys who may be on the opening day roster or may help them a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month into this thing with such a small window and so few fields.
Yeah, so you that's can't also go play a B game on backfield, right?
Yeah, you can't have – I mean, you might have somebody throwing on the main field and then a bullpen going on at the same time out in the outfield. But there's some rules regarding this, too, with social distancing. So – you know, what are you going to have? Maybe three pitchers going at once, whereas, you know, groups used to be six. So, or you'd have four fields going with live BP, eight pitchers throwing live BP at the same time. And that invites the question, really, Chris, is there even a possibility of somebody being a surprise member of the opening day roster?
So how would you define surprise? And
off the 40 man?
Well, so Dylan Carlson?
Yeah, Dylan Carlson. But, I mean, he's well-known, so maybe not.
No, but a surprise in the fact that, I don't think it would have been a coin flip, maybe, if you polled fans on March 10th, if he would be in St. Louis on opening day, maybe less than that. But, is it a surprise if he's here and they ease him in and he gets a couple of starts and a couple of pinch hits, knowing that, you know, he's not missing, you know, every day at bats in AAA? Would you define that as a surprise, or would it be a surprise only if he's the starting left fielder? He's not going to necessarily, and maybe he will, because far be it for me to assume what Schilt and his staff have cooked up. But the thing that's so damn frustrating, Derek, about when this happened is that we were just getting to the meat of spring training, where Dylan Carlson would have been given every opportunity to fail. He would have been given every opportunity to sink or swim, and he would have been seeing more big league pitching. He would have been seeing more big league pitching, multiple at-bats, through the first two or three times perhaps in a lineup over the next 2 weeks from the middle of March to the end of March. We would have gotten to see, and again, apples and oranges, because of where they are in their development, we would have gotten to see Nolan Gorman take more at-bats against big league pitching, right? And guys with breaking balls. We would have seen these young players get those game opportunities against big leaguers. And I just don't know how you can't replicate that from a competition standpoint right now over the next 19 days the way that you would have if you're playing the rest of a Grapefruit League schedule. So what would have surprised me in March is if Dylan Carlson completely took the matter into his own hands and just so greatly outplayed someone that he was starting in left field on opening day. That would have surprised me because I think that would have said more about Tyler O'Neill or Lane Thomas or Harrison Bader, Dexter Fowler, perhaps.
Right, they would have had to fail.
Right, and we will not have the opportunity to see that. So is there a rubric where there is a passing grade that says Dylan Carlson's our starting left fielder? I just don't know if that calculus is even on the blackboard right now. Does that make sense?
I don't think you can make that business decision. I mean, as blunt and as odd as it sounds, you cannot trade eight games for the loss of 162. I don't know of a team that would do that.
Agreed. You know, and
I think that there's an opening in the bullpen, though, for a surprise.
Yes.
And it would not shock me at all if Cody Whitley is the new John Breble.
Yeah. And, man.
Or Oviedo.
Oviedo could certainly, he would qualify as the surprise. Although, yeah, I mean, Whitley went, what, single A all the way to triple A last year. But
throws strikes, doesn't walk guys, power, sink. I mean, he's Seth Maness with horsepower. He's got a lot to like.
Doesn't walk anyone. Didn't give up any home runs in the PCO.
Yeah.
23 and two-thirds innings, didn't give up a home run in the PCO. Only gave up one home run all of last year, which I don't think that's repeatable, but another guy who I think that's the kind of – and every organization, you know, to some extent has them. But I think that's, like, the kind of, like, guy that frustrates other fan bases, you know, because he wasn't even on Cardinal fans' radars last year. And, you know, he made a mechanical change that he saw on video and picked up velocity, started striking more guys out, and just has never really walked anymore. And what a weapon. Like, they're so deep that last year, we didn't even mention Jordan Hicks, like, throughout the season because they were so deep, and I think the bullpen was managed so well. But, you know, think of already some of the question marks that we've talked about, Derek, and think about the luxury now of not having to rush Jordan Hicks back at all. Think of the luxury of being able to, you know, use Carlos in different ways or treat Oviedo the way you want to, or Andrew Miller. Maybe, you know, you think about Andrew Miller or John Gant's usage a little bit different because of some of the extra pieces you have, and maybe Andrew Miller in October could be Andrew Miller in October if you have other options throughout this season. So, I guess Whitley would be a surprise if he ended up, like, closing games because people would probably say, haven't really heard of this guy, but yeah, last year throughout the organization and this spring, he was, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he was essentially unhittable this spring as well.
The question that really the Cardinals had to answer coming into the 2020 season hasn't changed at all, and it was the one that was on full display during the National League Championship Series when the afterglow of their big inning against the Atlanta Braves did not have any offense whatsoever and faded quickly against the dominant pitching of the Washington Nationals. The Cardinals had a historically poor offensive performance in that National League Championship Series, and it really underscored the problems they had all season offensively. The lowest scoring team in the playoffs, below average offensively in every significant category, and coming into spring, they had, you know, let their cleanup hitter walk because they would rather have the draft pick than the production that he offered in the cleanup spot, and they wanted a different look to the lineup. So that question hasn't changed. And that's the one that I asked you, Chris, is how are they going to score runs? Are they going to be better than last year, or are they going to be more of the same? Because it's hard to contend with more of the same.
Yeah, I think that what we heard over the offseason was, you know, there is some expected regression up to the mean for certain guys, especially in terms of OBP. Like, you know, the year before in 2018, I know you wrote about the fact that, like, Matt Carpenter is just having really bad luck, right? And I don't know if you could see the stretch that he put together coming if you were just looking at spray charts, for instance, but they felt like, okay, this isn't like a declining asset in April and May, despite what his numbers said. Last year, he didn't look like someone who was just having bad luck. So not only are you banking on regression up to the mean from a number of guys, but you're banking on that after the last 3 or 4 months of not really doing anything. Will that be good? I think you can argue both sides of it. Like, if you want to be optimistic, you can say, hey, it's probably great for Paul Goldschmidt to get an extra couple of months off, right? Like, that guy's played so much baseball and been so dependable every single day. Matt Carpenter as well. Maybe a couple of extra months off will be great for that. Flip side of that is, okay, but now you're on the wrong side of side of 30, and now you've had 3 months without, you know, your eyes picking up off-speed pitches, and you're going to have to now do it in big league ballparks almost instantaneously. So I think hard to forecast. I think that they didn't add anyone of significance, right? Like, on paper, right now, can't speculate about Dylan Carlson, can't speculate about Lane Thomas. I don't really expect the offense to be that much better. Why can you? If a bunch of guys walk more, that'll be great. I guess Paul Goldschmidt, especially in the postseason, hit a bunch of solo home runs and doubles with nobody on base, so that could lead to runs. But if you're asking me right now, how is the offense going to be better? It's going to take some, I think, numbers that aren't expected, because they didn't add the piece. They didn't go out and make the impact move to put the guy in the middle that you say, that's the guy that will be your offense. Now, maybe it'll be Paul Goldschmidt, and he'll be 2018, 2017, 2016 Paul Goldschmidt, but just compared to last year, and if you strip the names off the box score and just present the numbers and the evidence and then who they're bringing back this year, I think it's fair to say the same guys, and you kind of expect the same results. And it's probably going to be against tougher pitching to some extent because of the way teams are going to use their pitching.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be a hard year to hit, and you're right. It's unfair to say that it comes down to one person, but if there's one area where one person could improve, what's that?
That's kind of the off-season meat for the fan base, right? It's like all the dumb, they don't spend money this. Well, no, but they also brought the same group back.
No, and it's entirely fair. The fan base has every right to be critical. If one person can change the look of the lineup with a really reasonable improvement, it's Paul DeJong at cleanup, better with runners in scoring position.
And that runner in scoring position at the start of every game. I mean, Colton Wong was maybe the best player in the National League the second half of the season. And I don't want to discount that. And offensively, Derek, it was unbelievable what he did. And I think he deserves some credit in a season where everyone else seemingly was struggling. They really took off when he was still in the seven hole and hitting everything. But then when they moved Colton and they moved Dexter Fowler up to the top of the order. And I guess it's maybe nice if we haven't had to have the Matt Carpenter leadoff or why can't he hit anywhere else debate yet to this point. But Wong was just unbelievable. I mean, he hit like 340, hit with power, got on base. Just he was one of the best players all around, including offensively in the National League. I would love to see him at leadoff, get things going, and then have, Paul DeJong and Paul Goldschmidt guys on base. Because if we're being fair about bringing the same group back, we also have to be fair and say, well, guys that generally would drive runners in didn't really have that many chances compared to past history to drive runners in.
Well, Paul Goldschmidt had some of the fewest runners in scoring position at bats of anybody. I mean, it was absurd. He came just shy of being the Cardinals' first 100 RBI guy since Matt Holliday, which feels like, 20 years ago. But Yeah, I mean, but the lack of production from that cleanup spot, you know, there were only 50 or so people who had as many at-bats as Ozuna did in the cleanup spot last year, and yet he was one of the least productive when it came to OPS. Yeah. You know, and Paul DeJong's been very candid about how much he struggled with runners in scoring position, and you just figure if those switches flip, that's one quick fix for the lineup. That you're right, guys on base, and then just a slight tick up or a return to norm or something closer to norm for Paul DeJong with runners in scoring position, and more at bats with runners in scoring position for Paul Goldschmidt, and all of a sudden you have a nudge to the offense. You have something. It's not going to be an offense that scares other teams, but you do have an uptick in that allows for a little bit more margin for error for the pitching, and that's a much better team.
And to be fair, point counterpoint, you said, you know, you let your cleanup hitter go because you value the draft pick more than your cleanup hitter. Why the hell was Marcell Ozuna your cleanup hitter?
I don't know. That's always, why did he have so many at-bats in that spot when he was so productive? Yeah, no one had more at-bats. No player had more at-bats in the cleanup spot the last 2 years than Marcell Ozuna. No player in baseball. And 30 players did better than him.
And no player suddenly started hitting less doubles inexplicably. He wasn't good.
He had a deed on the cleanup spot that was furious. Yeah.
And I know he hit 29 home runs last year somehow. I still don't really believe that. But, like, I could make the argument right now that they might be a better offensive team by removing Marcell Ozuna than if they had brought him back. Like, I just – especially if the insistence is that he has to bat fourth. Like, that was weird. So, yeah.
That was weird.
Granted, they did technically choose a draft pick over him, but – every other team in baseball chose to keep their draft pick over Marcell Ozuna as well.
Except for the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
And then
who swatched him, scoring a drop third strike in that first inning.
That's right.
So perfect. He inflicted so much damage that they had to have him.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, it'll be interesting to see where he fits for them, what he does in this short spring. And also how much he hammers away at that ballpark. I mean, it's a very friendly ballpark for him. So, you know, 1 year deal, not ideal for anybody, especially when that 1 year is 60 games. And that brings us to the final question that I asked, the seventh question. And I'll just get your quick thoughts on this, because while it's a big question, it sure seems like it has some real simple answers. And that's, can Major League Baseball pull this off? This is Ben Fredrickson and I talked about this in the previous episode of the Best Podcast in Baseball, how it would just be this tremendous feat of human cooperation to pull this off. So, Chris, do you think Major League Baseball can pull this off by doing what the NHL isn't, what the NBA isn't, by taking the game home and still keeping players safe?
I hope so. And again, like, if half the team tests positive, even if they're asymptomatic, do you just not play? Do you forfeit? Do you try to adjust the schedule? Thank goodness it's not the poor husband and wife at their kitchen table anymore trying to figure this out. But, like, what do you do? And, again, that is just the unknown. And, I would love to say that it's going to be great and, you know, we're going to get through a full regular season and we're going to have just this unbelievable, you know, non-stop 24-hour dance party of sports that start, like, at the beginning of August and go for, like, 4 months. But, man, something's got to go wrong, right? Like, stuff goes wrong when we don't have to deal with this. And from, like, I was just listening to Mo the other day, Derek, just talk about everything that goes on at the ballpark and how they've essentially, like, in a matter of what, like a month, like almost repurposed that entire stadium from, like, a baseball operations standpoint. And just there are so many moving parts, and I give them credit for it. It's unbelievable, but so many moving parts in every single day. And, you know, this isn't like a take care of your sprained ankle and then you'll be able to start going in 2 weeks. There are so many factors that are out of everyone's control. And then you're asking, again, a lot of people to outside of incredible competition and being a professional athlete and, you know, playing the game at the highest level, then go, what, just shut it off and be boring and sit around? Like, I'm not accusing anyone of being a rule breaker, but I don't know, man. I just have a feeling, especially the way everything has gone for everyone over the last few months, that there will be bumps in the road. I hope that collectively baseball deals with them and that we get to the postseason, because Lord knows I've been thinking about that now every day for the last 4 months as I walk around my apartment trying to think of things to do.
And also, while you worked on the 2011 project, tell me a little bit about the 2011 project that you did and where people can find it.
Oh, yeah, thanks. So we started replaying 2011 games once it was evident that this thing was going to take a while. And we started with the late August series against the Pirates the day after Adam Wainwright gave, as John Mozeliak calls it, the Belushi speech at the Missouri Athletic Club. And Chris
Carter. Knights of the Cauliflower Ear.
Yeah, exactly. And we played the rest of the season in the postseason, and I was doing pregames and postgames, and just, you know, long story short, I was having some great conversations with people like you and the players from the team and staff that I said, I can turn this into something different. It was, you know, in the midst of the Jordan documentary and some really cool storytelling through sports without sports happening. So I pitched it, turned it into kind of an oral history podcast series, and last Wednesday was episode 7, which took us through that incredible run where they beat the Brewers 2 out of 3, the Nigel Morgan game where they swept the Braves, where they won 3 of 4 in Philly. So we're getting ready for the postseason. You can hear it Wednesday nights on KMOX at 6 o'clock, or you can subscribe to the Sports Open Line podcast or go to KMOX.com. It's called 2011 Revisited. I think folks will enjoy it. You are prominently featured, so I appreciate your time and willingness to play along. But it's been great because these guys, you know, you get them on the phone, guys like Carpenter and Berkman and, you know, Scouse and Craig. Like, I was talking to each of these guys for an hour. So
that's awesome.
It's been cool, and I hope people check it out. Yeah, 2011 Revisited. I appreciate you mentioning.
Yeah, I hope people do, and I know that people who listen to this podcast are right about sick of my voice by now, so try to skip through those parts maybe and just go to the good parts where the players are talking about.
You had a great, great line. You said the birth really of modern analytics, or modern analytics in the Cardinals organization, were birthed from, you know, Dave Duncan's trunk, and I like that, and I'm going to use that.
Yeah, well, it's all yours. That's Chris Raby of KMOX. You'll be hearing him talk baseball quite a bit here at KMOX 1120 AM. And, of course, the podcast that he just mentioned, you can subscribe to it. The best podcast in baseball is available at stltoday.com and anywhere else you get your podcast, including iTunes. You will find all of our Constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com, including coverage from the ballpark. You know, there's going to be limited access. It's going to be controlled access. A lot of the interviews to start are going to be via tech, either Zoom or telephone. But we're going to do our best at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch and through this podcast to bring you to the ballpark when fans can't come into the ballpark. That's going to be our charge, as well as covering the news and the stories coming out of it as baseball tries to pull off really the unthinkable. The last time the virus was spiking like this, baseball stopped. And here we are now with more states experiencing rises than aren't, and baseball is trying to get going. It's going to be a fascinating, possibly historic attempt here, and we'll do our best at the Post-Dispatch, and I know Chris and his crew at KMOX will do their best to bring you the game unlike any game we've seen. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. Get organized with Closets by Design of St. Louis. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BYDESIGN. Closets by Design, the official sponsor of the best podcast in baseball. Chris, thank you very much for joining me, man. It's been a pleasure talking to you. We have completed the home and home. We've played to a draw. So that means we'll have to have a tiebreaker podcast. Cool.
Tiebreaker, rubber game finished under protest. You know, Derek, this year, nothing would surprise me, but thanks for having me, man. Always enjoy it, and we'll do it again soon.
For Chris Raby of KMOX 1120 AM and STLtoday.com, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. This has been the best podcast in baseball. Talk to you soon. Stay healthy, stay informed, and we'll talk to you from the ballpark.